It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 557. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. I have one for later in the show. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. I have another jam-packed show. I have some stories from the trenches. I'm going to talk about what I'm working on and some things that are happening while I'm consulting that may impact you or help you out. I have the voicemail with some really great comments. Then the emails, we continue to have some Windows 10 emails. So we're going to still talk a little bit about Windows 10. I think that's going to be, for a long time, a little segment of the show on Windows 10. Then I have email responses to a couple things over the last few shows. I can't wait to get to them. We actually have some really great answers for some questions that have been lingering. One comment for the topic for next week. I've gotten great emails this week on your favorite tools and your utilities that you use, the software utilities, and your favorite tools for your go bag in doing repairs. Great. Keep them coming. We're going to just one more week. I'm going to collect the emails, and that's the show for next week. It will be a massive amount of links in the show notes because there are some just great utilities that are being recommended. So I can't wait to put that all together. And that's next week's show, September 3rd, Thursday night. Look forward to that. I'm collecting all the emails. Keep them coming. And I will put them all together and talk about them. So let's talk about some of the jobs that I have that I'm working on right now. Two new offices, or at least one office that's being totally redone. The doctor's office I talked about. I have a stack of equipment here that tomorrow and over the weekend I'm putting together the Synology NAS, putting those drives in, getting that configured, building the backup, which is going to be 6 terabyte red Western Digital NAS drive that I'm putting in an external enclosure. That's going to be the local backup to the Synology NAS. I have access points to configure, a router to configure. I'm going to do as much as I can here. So Wednesday, after the wiring's done, it's going to be easy to migrate everything and bring everything up before they come in Thursday morning. Friday morning, I have another office that we're bringing up that's financial advisor, and almost the exact same thing. So I have some network printers to configure. We got the wiring's all done there. But I have to bring up the router, access points, make sure everything's patched, everything's going to be working. They don't go live in their office till the week later, but Comcast is already in for their internet, so now we can finish that off. That's next Friday. So this is a lot of the equipment and cables and everything that I've been buying and having here in my office to get ready for these deployments. couple things. Tomorrow, going to a home where there are three desktops and two laptops, and there's massive amounts of data being stored on all of them. And the person who's using the majority of these devices, he is literally has a lot of duplicates. He's keeping the same information on every computer, and that's crazy. We need a central data silo in the house. It's a great way to put it. He needs a NAS device. So tomorrow, I'm recommending the Synology NAS. We're going to talk about what size drives. I'm going to have him order everything for using my Amazon link. And so once it all comes in, come back, hook it all up. While I'm doing that, I am so glad my son, Michael Jr., has been with me full time. He has been just a godsend in being able to send him to clients and take care of work. I have him out almost every day. And when he's not out, I have him here helping me in the office. I have two laptops that are broken that have been given to me by clients. Tomorrow, I got to look at. I don't know what's wrong with them. I have two more devices that I'm going to be upgrading to Windows 10. One of the things that I really like is clients coming to me ahead of time before they do the upgrade themselves and say, Mike, let's talk about Windows 10. Should I or shouldn't I? Now, my one client that has a Surface Pro 3, I said absolutely, because he has Windows 8.1 and the Surface just upgraded flawlessly. But with all these different security settings that have things that have to be turned off and adjusted, I get that under my full control when I'm doing the Windows 10 upgrade for the client. So I got a couple systems here. I'm going to be doing that and then building everything out. So been tremendously, tremendously busy. The client that also tomorrow we're visiting, and I'm recommending the Synology NAS, they want seamless wireless throughout the house. And one of the things that I have been setting up and talking about was those ASUS routers, putting them in a mode for access points that they're all the same name and we can have seamless roaming. And I have deployed that for two businesses and two very large homes. I am very happy to recommend that for this house because I've got four successes under my belt and I've been able to easily make this happen where it's the seamless wireless throughout a very large space. Before I get to the voicemail, a couple more items. A long time ago, I talked about the Square service and the device that you add to your iPhone to be able to take credit cards. Do you know all this time I have not taken a credit card for payment until yesterday? I took my first credit card payment using Square and it worked perfectly. I was very, very happy to be able to just offer that. I ate the percentage because I wanted to make sure that it would work. And it was interesting. It was a new client on Tuesday that I know was a one-time shot. He was recommended. He had a particular problem with the router. I went out. I fixed it. I may never see him again. It was a break fix that was handed to me from one of my clients. And you don't know about this. It's a single-man operation in a very small business. And I don't know how he's going to pay. And when he offered to pay via credit card, I was like, yes, I'll take it. So tonight, I'm helping a client that was referred to me. This person had trouble with their domain. Boy, you've heard this story over and over. The IT company went out of business and he can't get a hold of them. And this is a little more dire. The domain not only did it expire, it was placed in a deleted mode that even network solutions could not help us. Even if he proved that he owned the domain, they were unable to do anything because it was in that mode where it was already targeted to be available and it was out of their hands. It became available on the 20th, I believe, and he was able to purchase it. He was very lucky, but it wasn't one of those domains that everybody is after. It was pretty unique to his company name. He was able to get the domain, and now that he got it, he needed email. And tonight, I went on to his GoDaddy account where he was able to get the domain, and we then went to SureWeb. He signed up for his Exchange-hosted email. I was able to change the MX records. Now we're all done. We've never met. It's all been over the phone, and I want to invoice him. How do we want payment? And when he said, do you take a credit card? I said, yes, I do. And he was able to just give me that over the phone, and I was able to punch it in. So you have the ability with Square to not have the credit card in your hand. I believe they charge you a little higher percent. So I got hit with 3.65%, which I think is outrageous. But since I don't take credit cards that often, I don't mind eating that. Or I can take a credit card, but I have to add a percentage. I didn't want to do that for these two accounts, but I have mentioned that in the past, and that has deterred people away from giving me the card and then write me a check, so this way I didn't have to deal with the fees. If someone feels comfortable and they're willing to make the extra payment, the extra fee, or maybe I should just raise my rates and act, you know, $5 an hour or something and keep it in place, that'd be great. Now, I know they advertise 2.75%. I got hit with 3.65. I just want to be clear. And I was able to generate an invoice right after that where it wanted to know, do you want to text it? And it gives you the option of a phone number or an email to be able to send them the invoice. I was able to do that, and it went through very quickly. And I got paid within 24 hours. It was set up in my bank. Very, very happy with that. Not happy with the percentage, but happy with getting paid quickly. Give a listen to Michael here, his voicemail.
Hi, Mike. This is Michael from Buffalo, New York. First of all, I just want to say awesome show. I've been enjoying you since I found you through a tech ripple effect, I'll call it. Kerry Holzman was a guest on one of the Podnuts podcasts a while back, and from there I found him, and then I found Tech Vets, and then I stumbled upon the Mike Tech Show as a cross-promotion from Tech Vet. So just want to say I've been enjoying everything that you've been producing and doing, and thank you for all that you do and all that you contribute to this industry. I wanted to comment on the last show that you did. You were talking about Windows 10 and rolling it back to Windows 7 or Windows 8 within that 30-day time period. I've tested Windows 10 on a bunch of different computers, including my main machine on my bench, and found that it's the install process, both the upgrade and the clean install, have done remarkably well. It's very refreshing to see just how Microsoft has developed Windows 10 and how it's behaving. But even the rollback, that went off without a hitch. I just wanted to try it just because I knew I was going to be getting questions about it, and it worked just fine. It actually took less time to roll back than the install, and everything came back. All of my programs and software, everything that was on my original Windows 7 installation worked fine. It was as if nothing ever happened. So just wanted to let you know that if anybody needs to do that or wants to do that, they should be able to do it without a problem. And then your other comment about portable apps, I would say I've had some really good success with CCleaner. If you're not able to find a portable version of it, I have always stuck a USB drive into a computer and went to install it right onto the flash drive versus the C drive. So I'll point it to that drive as the install location, and then I just run the .exe file from there, and I can jump from machine to machine and have sort of a portable version of it, and it works great. And then lastly, I wanted to comment on someone had mentioned installing those utilities on the client's computer versus doing the portable version. I've done that where I'll put it in a hidden directory on the C drive, and then I'll hide the shortcuts to launch those programs in a folder that I'll put in the admin folder in the start menu, administrative tools, I believe. And what I do is I put it in there and then I turn it off as an option in the start menu, and then they don't even see it. But it's already loaded on that machine just in case, you know, just in case I need that tool or utility down the road. And I happen to forget my flash drive or, you know, whatever I'm bringing my utilities on, I already have it on that machine. So just wanted to pass that along. Again, awesome show. Keep up the great work and appreciate all that you do, sir.
Michael, thank you so much for the kind words and your comments. I really like that idea. It's a great little tip to hide the icon, move the folder to a place where your client's not going to easily see it to run those utilities, because we don't want our clients running some of these utilities and messing things up. So that's a real good idea. Thank you for taking the time for that voicemail, Michael. A couple links that I'm going to be adding to the show notes here. And one of them is one of my favorite newsletters, and it's Love My Surface newsletter. And the latest one has an article, Windows 10 Privacy Concerns on Surface Tablets. So I want to have that link in the show notes. A couple links from Kate that Kate shared with me in an email with privacy concerns. This is big, and you want to read these articles, understand the tips for turning them off, but also understand that there are people out there analyzing that after you turn the settings off, your system is still transmitting data to Microsoft. This is unproven yet, I believe. And I'm not sure how much data and what data is being transmitted. I haven't hooked up a sniffer to Windows 10, and maybe that's what I need to do, and then take a look at what is being sent from a Windows 10 system. But there could be real security concerns and compliance concerns if this is the case. Just mentioning that you beware. And let's hope this doesn't explode in Microsoft's face with some of their settings that they want. I know we can turn them off, but let's hope that if I turn something off and I don't want it to communicate, let's hope that that setting truly makes sure that it won't communicate. Here's an email about Windows 10 from Jim. I have been working a lot lately, so I am behind on watching your shows, but was thinking about Windows 10 upgrade. Windows 10 is a free upgrade from Microsoft for users of Windows 7 and Windows 8. Should I upgrade to Windows 10? What the extended support of Windows XP ended in April 8, 2014. I was forced to upgrade to a different OS or stop using Windows XP machine. To be fair, most computers needed to be replaced. According to Microsoft, end of extended support for Windows Vista will be on April 11, 2017. Windows 7 will be January 14, 2020. Windows 8 will be January 10, 2023. And finally, Windows 10 will be October 14, 2025. I have an old dual-core laptop that I upgraded from Windows XP to Windows 7, and it works, but slowly. So on January 14th, 2020, support for Windows 7 will end, and my old laptop will need to be replaced. No, not really. I have a solution for you. If I get 5 more years out of an old, slow laptop, I will have pinched my pennies enough. So, should I upgrade this machine to Windows 10? In my opinion, no. You know, it's interesting. If you're at Windows 7, I'm on the fence whether you should go to 10 or not. If you're Windows 8 or Windows 8.1, I say absolutely upgrade to Windows 10 because it's a better interface. The mixed menu that now they have, the start menu with an extended Metro or modern interface extended to that menu for Windows 10, that's nice. Some of the improvements, some of the enhancements, it's great. I have problems with some of these privacy and security concerns, but if we manage that and get everything set, you could be okay. Here's the situation, Jim. To get the speed out of your system, I'm taking old dual-core systems, throwing an SSD in it, and it's blowing the doors off of systems that are Core i7s. It's all about the hard drive. And if you can put an SSD in there, you are going to breathe many, many more years. I'm going to finish this email, and I got to tell you a story from this week. Every computer should be evaluated on its useful life as compared with the end of extended support of the current operating system. 10 months ago, I bought a new Core i7 computer with Windows 7 on it, and I will upgrade the machine to Windows 10. Of course, I will need to convince my wife that Windows 7 should be replaced with Windows 10. If I do replace it, I will get 5 more years and 10 months of service from the operating system. One last possibility would be to wait until Windows 12 to upgrade in about 2 years. Just some of my thoughts about upgrading to Windows 10. I hope you have a great day. Jim, a couple things on Windows 10, and I forget where I read this or heard this. Windows 10 is supposedly going to be the last operating system. I don't know if there is an end of life. I'm surprised you were able, and I have to research this, that they've already set an end of life or end of extended support at 2025, because I believe the goal of Microsoft is to have this almost as the final operating system that they will just continuously patching and upgrading. Boy, that's going to be ugly. I mean, how many years do you go? You're going to have 1,000 patches? Boy, I certainly hope not. That would be terrible. You know, you get original media one day and you're doing a Windows 10 and then have to sit through 600 updates. It's bad enough I have to go through 200 updates on Windows 7. Anyway, just my 2 cents. Let's get back to something. Client had an old Vista laptop that the drive needed to be securely wiped. They did not want the system. They lost the power cord. And this is a Dell Latitude with 4 gigs of RAM that had Vista Business on it. I took the system, took the drive out, wiped it. But I put a 256 gig SSD in there. I then took the Dell Windows 7 Professional. It installed perfectly. I bought a battery and a new power cord for under $30, the combination from Amazon, that were third party, a battery and a power cord. This system boots in 8 seconds with Windows 7 Pro, and it is flying, and it is the perfect laptop for my son as he goes off doing work. It's faster than most of the systems around here that don't have SSDs, that have significantly faster processors. This is a 7-year-old computer. As my son enters the chat here, this is a 7-year-old computer that we have breathed new life into it, and I believe we've added at least 5 more years. This is what you do to upgrade and preserve systems. We can easily, he's already got the Windows 10 icon on it. Now, are we going to put Windows 10 on it? Eventually, but not right now, because I want to use Windows 7. It's a lot easier to configure routers and to go out when you're visiting clients and when you're working on items. That's important, and I still want to have consulting laptops that are Windows 7. But here we go with Jim with this email. Jim, put an SSD in there and then upgrade to Windows 10, and you are going to be fine for years to come. This is the way to recycle your computers. Make sure you have minimum of 4 gig of RAM and do everything humanly possible to get an SSD in the system. That's, I think, the perfect answer here. All right, let's keep going. Got lots of email here. This is from Frank. HP Pavilion laptop won't sleep. Enjoy your show. Appreciate your work. Upgraded to Windows 10 on an HP Pavilion laptop. Everything looked pretty good, but the computer would not sleep on a lid close. That's odd. That's how I live. I close the lid. So if I have quick question, I can open the lid and go live quick. There was a lot of information on the web, some of which would work for a few minutes or in an hour, but nothing was permanent. The machine would lock up in a shutdown instead of sleeping, and instead and needed a hard reset. You got to go through your power options and set what do you want to happen when you close the lid. So you got to go to control panel, power options, and you can set this. The thread I followed most was on the HP discussion page. It got to page 117 before someone nailed the solution. Back off the Intel management engine driver from version 11 to version 9. Get the software from Intel, not HP. The laptop is happy. I'm happy. It sleeps just like it used to under Windows 8.1. Keep up the good work. That's a great solution. And thank you. But you hear what I was thinking. Go into power management. And this is something that a lot of people don't do. If you go into power management, make sure you pick high performance. You don't want your drive to go to sleep if it's plugged in. Make sure hard drive sleep is not 20 minutes. In those advanced settings, put the zero in for never. Would you ever want a desktop to hibernate? No. Go in, turn off the hibernation mode. These are simple things that can increase performance on your system and get rid of some troubling and frustrating things like you walk away from your computer for a while, you come back, and you can't understand why it takes so long to wake up and things to go. Well, that's because your hard drive went to sleep. And you know what? All that's doing is putting more wear and tear on your hard drive. This is my opinion. I think you should maximize your power settings. You're paying for the machine. Get the most power out of it. And that's what you want to do. Thank you, Frank, for that tip. This is from Rod. Oh, it's about my Amazon link. Rod wrote me that he has seen a couple places that when he compared my Amazon link, they weren't the same. And he's worried whether I would get credit for it. Here's the key. If you see anywhere in the link where it says Mike Tech Show equal 20, anywhere in that link, I'm getting credit because that is my affiliate code for getting a commission. And it's Mike Tech Show equals 20. Now, if you go to Amazon.MikeNation.net, you've heard me at the end of every show. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back. That link will always work, but if you ever see a product link or a link that under the wiki for affiliate links, as long as Mike Tech Show equals 20 is in there, I'm getting credit. I really appreciate Rod taking the time to make sure that I was getting credit for his purchases. I really appreciate that. Thank you. This is also from Rod. Mike, I just emailed you about your Amazon link and started to include this question, but decided to create a separate email. I know you have covered this topic before, but I either misunderstood or missed some of the important details. Here is my goal. I need to implement two wireless access points in the same office where I do not have access to the main router or access to the public addresses. I want to create an internal wireless that has access to the client's LAN. I want to create a guest wireless that has different IP addresses and does not have access to the client LAN. Here's what I did. I bought two MediaLink routers from your Amazon link. Router one configured for internal wireless with a SID of, say, internal. I turned off DHCP on the router and plugged one of the LAN ports into the client LAN. This works, and wireless clients pick up DHCP from the office DHCP server, and they have an IP address on the client LAN. That's perfect. That's exactly what should be happening. Router 2 configured for guest wireless with a SID of, say, guest. I gave the LAN on the router a different IP subnet and turned on DHCP. I configured the WAN port for DHCP. I plugged the WAN port of this router into the client LAN. No, I didn't even read the rest of this email. This is where you went wrong, Rob. You need to get a separate cable that extends from the back of the router that is the cable modem or whatever the internet provider device is. And you need to extend that to where you want the guest access point. And now he's pulling a WAN IP address that is provided from the ISP. So this is where it went off the tracks here. This works. Wireless clients picks up a DHCP lease from the guest router and are on a different IP subnet than the client LAN. I would not have done this. Guest isolation does not work. That is correct. Even though the guest clients are handed an IP address on a different subnet, the routers will route that subnet to the client LAN. And the guest clients will have access to the client LAN. That's right. You have to bypass your client LAN, and you did not do that. I know I can and have done this with a firmware load of DDWRT on some Linksys routers and have actually created the internal end and an isolated guest wireless on the same router while plugged into the same client LANs. I have not. Why take a chance? Keep them isolated. Here, I don't want to do that. I know I can also take the guest wireless and position it on an unused public IP address to isolate it from the client LAN. But for some situations, I will not have that luxury. And I was just thinking, you had mentioned something in one of your earlier podcasts about how to accomplish this on an internal network. And I guess the point that I didn't cover strong enough or was missed was that you need a Cat6 line that goes directly from the ISP modem and now plug that into the WAN port of the guest router. And now you have totally isolated guest access from your internal LAN. Okay. Also at home, I tried taking another high-end customer dual band Netgear router offering guest wireless and configuring it the way I want it. But the problem with this one and most others I have seen is that the router itself has to be in place as the main router in order for the guest wireless to work, because the guest wireless does not work if you have turned off DHCP on the router. That is correct. And if this is not a workable solution, are you aware of any low-cost specialty routers that could offer an isolated guest network while plugged into the LAN? I've done some searching and haven't come up with much yet. Sorry for the long email. Thanks for the good work on your podcast. Rod, you ask a great question. First off, is there a device that you could plug it in the LAN that's going to totally isolate it? The device would have to provide its own separate DHCP And even then, it's eventually going to traverse your network. Have a separate router with a line that goes directly to its own separate internet connection. Now, not a separate internet coming into the office. I'm going to give you a scenario. What if your internet provider only provides one Ethernet port? Well, put a hub or a little switch and now plug your router into one, run another Cat6 line from that little dummy switch all the way to where you want the guest wireless, and then put that router. So that's how we create multiple connections coming off just maybe one Ethernet port for that particular ISP. Let me know how you make out, Rod, and if that helped you. This is from Thomas. Love the show and look forward to it every week. Thank you for all the time that you invest. My question has to do with proprietary software and VPN usage in a small optometrist's office. I have been doing basic tech support for this office, which has never more than infection cleanups and some new PC setups. However, they recently decided to move to a new patient management software called Foxfire, not to be confused with the Mozilla browser Firefox that's used for keeping track of appointments, insurance, prescription services, billing, etc. This software is supposed to manage every need in the office. But with a new way of doing things comes confusion and questions. So it seems that I am getting pulled in helping with this migration. As it turns out, the software is not installed locally, but on servers on Foxfire's end. And they are using what looks like RDP to run on any PC in the office, including wireless convertible laptops. The problem now is that they are telling us that we need to have a VPN router for this to work through. It's to work, though it is currently working as they train on the software. I finally had to get on the phone with their rep, and how he explained it to me was that the RDP is a secure connection, but they can't allow print or scanner functions to pass through and thus need to set up a connection with the VPN for this to work. Some kind of limitation with server 2003, according to the rep. Boy, I wish they were using Citrix. If they had a Citrix server farm running their app, they would be able to solve everything with the printing that they run into. And as a matter of fact, I manage that in the corporate world with a Citrix farm. First question, does this sound accurate? Yes, it does. And by the way, RDP is not secure. And I would prefer you to have a VPN connection from the office to their server, and then all the RDP traffic traveling over the encrypted VPN tunnel that was created from your office to the software. That I understand and accept, and it's secure. Second question. The office currently has a basic $80 Netgear wireless router, the R6300, and a few switches in various spots. How will the inclusion of this new VPN router affect the network, and where in line does it go? My thoughts are that it would have to go modem, which is Comcast VPN, then wireless router, connect everything to their wireless router ports and radio. If we installed it modem, wireless router, then VPN, would the laptops be able to see the devices wired to the VPN? I greatly look forward to hearing your thoughts. It gets complicated now because you have to make sure that the VPN is created and that you can basically split tunnel. And this gets complicated. You want all of your traffic that doesn't go to them to go out the internet, and only the traffic that is set to go for the software goes through the VPN. You're now into a more expensive router. It's not going to be, unfortunately, an $80 router. It's going to be more expensive. And I would think that they would have many clients that are doing this and would have a recommended router. I would be shocked. You need to get back on with the technical support for them providing the software for the place providing that, and get some more details as to what router you're going to need and the setup. There's another way to do this, which is OpenVPN, but they're probably not set up for this. I have a client right now that uses the software CNG, and they go over an encrypted VPN tunnel, but each workstation has the OpenVPN software that they connect to the tunnel. They will open that up, connect. Now the VPN connection's on the client workstation. When they open the CNG client, the client's configured to traverse that VPN back to the CNG servers. Now anything else that this client workstation does goes out the regular connection. I don't know if I totally confused you or helped you. Hopefully I helped. Thomas, follow up with me if you have any other questions. This is from David, and this is about Office 2007 and Windows 10. Here's the consensus. I've gotten a few emails on this, and it seems like if you have the starter edition, you're out of luck. It's not going to work on Windows 10. That's what the consensus seems. But if you have the full OEM or full retail version of Office 2007 or Office 2010, it will work. But if you have a basic or starter version of Office, you're out of luck. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. That was the last email. We'll save the rest for next week. Now, remember, next week's show is going to be on your favorite Windows utilities that you use in consulting or wherever when you're troubleshooting or helping a client. I want your favorite utilities. And then the three tools that you have to have in your go bag. Tell me what's in your go bag. Continue to send those emails. I am collecting everything, and I will discuss it in next week's show. Remember, if you're buying anything from Amazon, if you know anybody buying from Amazon, please use my link, amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a little commission comes back to help support the show. Also, remember to please support our sponsor, Instant House Call. Go to instanthousecall.com, download the free trial for 15 days, use the promo code MikeTechShow. I also have the links for affiliates, Fabs Auto Backup for Tech 6 Pro, if you're doing any kind of a data migration or moving from one system to another, an operating system from another, that is the must-have utility. That's it. I'll see everybody back here next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.